Welcome to selfdiscoveryradio.com, where the orchard of wisdom is just ready for picking. We celebrate your why, the journey that you've taken that inspires someone else. We support your services. We support your story. Come and be our guest. Become a host. Be an author with us. Come see what we've got. Our next show is... Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of our veterans, our global veteran stories. And I love doing these, although few and far between, but to have a veteran come and share their story. It's not about the war glory. It's about the thrival and the survival and who they've become after the war and the camaraderie that is made and the support of one another when they come home, which is truly very beautiful. I have back here today Scott Husing, who was here with me actually a year ago, where he told his story of Echo Ramadi. And it's about his time there and the really kind of the courage, the strength, the horrors and the impact that it had there. And we're going to dive a little bit into what that was about, but I'm going to invite you to go back to listen to the other show because he really goes in depth to really what happened there and why it prompted him to write the book. But today it is about, and I don't know if I mentioned I'm Sarah Troy, I forgot if I did that or not. So automatic, I'll never forget, I never remember if I did it or not. But it is about him sharing the impact that this book has had, which is wonderful to see. People write books and they're writing them for a reason. They want to share that story. They want to move other people. They want to invite them. They want to help them understand what's going on. And the impact that he's had in a year has been truly extraordinary. And it's ordinary people who he has touched. And it's been very, very meaningful. We're going to take that journey with Scott today and find out exactly the impact it's had. Welcome back to the show, Scott.
Hey, it's great to be back on with you. I love it.
I mean, the story that you gave was very impactful. There's a few things that you mentioned in it, you know, like your comrades kind of dropping in front of you and you can't do anything about it, you know, because if you went out to try and save them, you know, you're the next bullet. And we forget, we see movies and we see stories and it looks all glorified, but we really forget kind of the horrors that you guys go through and the intensity of being not just in the moment, you're in the second, aren't you? You know, like literally a second can make a difference. Would you please, because I do want people to go back to the other show, but just give them a little bit about what Echo and Ramadi is about.
Well, since we launched the book in February of this year, it's really, you know, we did the show a year ago. Yes. And talked about the book and it was going to come out February 20th of this year. And so it's been 6 months. And it really, I've learned so much since releasing the book because I get so many emails and responses back from people that read it. And it's almost redefined how I share the message of the story. And if people ask me today what the core message of Echo and Ramadi is, it's the power of human connection. And I've always felt that the book was about the people. That was what was most important to me, was writing about the people, not the events or things, but these amazing people that allowed us to fight and survive and win as we fought in some of the deadliest fighting in the history of modern urban warfare in Ramadi in 2006. But it really is a story about leadership as well and team building and overcoming adversity, not just while we fought, but still to this day. The Marines and the soldiers and the families are amazing Gold Star families that keep us so interconnected to remain strong and support each other through social media, through phone calls, through events, fundraising. Everything we do is just to stay connected. And it's not hyperbole, that power of human connection. And there's so many different ways you can achieve that. And when we teed up this show, I told you how I have this theory that I don't have electronic friends. Mm-hmm. Although I've got tens of thousands of people that are friends with me and follow me, they're not electronic friends. They're real people. You and I have never had a cup of coffee in the same room. Like we're having coffee here, you know.
Yes.
It's amazing.
The connection's real. The connection is real because it's vibrational. You don't have to physically be there. You know, the vibration of the person, the connection is in that frequency, in that vibration. And you're just as much there as you are, even if you're across the world.
Yeah. And that's so true. When we meet for the first time, it will be like we've known each other our whole lifetimes. Yeah. And that's happened to me so many times where I've essentially had pen pals and we've communicated and supported each other. And, you know, we play hot potato with veterans and other artists on different podcasts and shows. And ultimately we wind up in the same city and we meet, and it is that, that common bond of being a storyteller or somebody that loves sharing stories of hope and of people. And that's what's really made me extremely happy as we've moved forward in just the last 6 months. And it's really been the secret of my success, as the book has become a number one bestseller on Amazon multiple times. And it just sold out. They're having to reprint more copies. You know, worst things for an author to have.
Yes. Yeah. Not the thousands of books in the garage. Please somebody buy it.
Yeah. No, I've had that problem. So, great.
The thing is that, you know, a lot of people ask me, why do I, you know, tell veteran stories, you know, and it's because, you know, I'm not about the glory of war, and I don't think any veteran, true veteran, is about that either. It is about liberty. It is about freedom. It is about the independence, and it is about the rights of humanity. But what I love about interviewing veterans is the camaraderie you have for each other. You know, very often we see the governments have let you down. You know, there's so much post-traumatic stress, so many people being, you know, homeless, and so many people by the wayside. And I've, you know, told those stories here on Self Discovery Radio TV. But it's the how you come together to support one another. If, you know, if you're being let down in one area, you step up yourselves as a community and support one another. There isn't any judgment. There isn't any damning. There's an understanding of what people are going through in their process of coming back into life. And you're not going to come back the same person as you were when you went out to fight. And you've been out there a lot. So I imagine who you were with that greenhorn when you first went out to who you are today, a totally different person. But I would also say that probably you were a better person today because of the experiences that you've been through and the fact that you've built a community and you've brought people together to share, not to commiserate on the misery or, you know, the war hunger, but the survival, the thrival, the love of each other. And, you know, there's nothing like it, is there, about people coming together and supporting one another?
We try to always focus on those positive aspects, and it gets tiring for a lot of veterans and for a lot of Gold Star families that have lost. I mean, they lost a son or a daughter or a husband or a wife or a brother and a sister. We can relate to that because they were our brothers and sisters too, in a sense, as we fought through some of the worst conditions and seeing some of the things that the worst humanity has to offer. But we don't like to dwell on those. And there are groups out there that they get around and they just want to sit around and talk about war stories or memorialize the dead continually instead of telling the stories of their life and all of the great things they're doing now. Because one of the great things about the Marine Corps and the military itself is, you know, we do have this sense of meritocracy where it doesn't matter about what you've done. It's what you're capable of doing in the future. That's why you get promoted to the next level. That's why you advance and are assigned increased billets of responsibility and leadership. And that's carried over into my life today as an artist and as a writer and a commentator and writing op-eds. And that type of mentality to continue to focus on all the positive things and even look at the negative things as enablers that tell you forward. So, you know, I don't want to go back there.
Right.
I definitely don't need that in my life. And I think that allows you the ability to remove all those distractions and really focus on those positive things. And when we bring people together, that's what we try and do. And we do that through so many ways, through outreach programs, through the nonprofit that I'm the executive director of, and all the other great nonprofits that have their own thing. Like, we know what we're good at. It may be taking guys offshore fishing or up to the mountains in Southern California, your thing may be that you need a service dog and that's your area, or you need to go surfing, or you like skiing, whatever it is. There's all of these great organizations in the veteran community and supporters of veterans like you that understand that there's a lot of different ways that people can continue to heal throughout their life so they can achieve what they want to in life and really be successful.
You see, I see you as more than a veteran. And I think, you know, people that kind of get stuck around the old stories haven't moved on yet. They haven't seen themselves outside of being that veteran. And you have taken all the discipline and the skills and the knowledge that you learned, and you've applied it now to this part of your life, but still keeping the thread of the veteran there. So this is the reason why I do the shows, is because of the, you understand better than anyone, you know, what people are going through. And it, you know, it's not disregarding people's loss, but it's showing them that by being a family and everyone being in it together, they haven't lost anything. They've gained everyone else, and the memory of whom they've lost is there. Yeah. is in that village, is in that community. And, you know, the physical person may be lost, but the memory is never lost. And by honoring the families, because so often it's the families that get left behind, and you say, oh, very well, he died for my country, but where am I now? Where's the support now? And you've brought everybody into the fold. And they're all part of the veteran fold. They're all part of that family, and you're not leaving them behind. And that's so important, because that's where creativity and that's where possibilities and that's where options happen. You know what they need. Who's going to help me create it? What are we going to do? Who's good at this? Who's good at that? Let's make it happen. That's the driving force.
It is. And I just shared a video on my Facebook page and Twitter yesterday. It's on YouTube, about a Gold Star father that reached out to me. Just an amazing story. Another great example of that power of human connection. Total stranger, said that he'd read the book, told me about his story of his son. His name is Kevin Lucas, and his son's name is Kevin Lucas. We didn't serve in the same unit in the military, but we fought in the city of Ramadi in 2006. And his son, Kevin A. Lucas, was killed in action May 26th of 06. But his dad just reached out to me, and I emailed him, and I couldn't resist signing a copy of the book for him, and I stuck it in the mail the same day, and I posted that video. And I woke up this morning, had like 2,000 people had already watched the video, and it made me smile, because it was just something that I thought of. I just had the urge to reach out to Kevin and let everybody know that our Gold Star families are just these extraordinary people. There's nothing ordinary about them. No. And when they make that connection with me, it's very important, because I still like it, and I'm honored that they can see me as a leader even to this day, because my leadership didn't stop when I left Ramadi. It didn't stop when I left the Marine Corps.
You just changed directions.
Leadership is not a 9-to-5 job. And not everybody has that capacity to carry that weight of leadership with them their entire lives. Some regress back into just being a follower, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm very honored and proud that so many people reach out like that. And what's interesting too is, right after I got done with some work, there was another email from a Vietnam vet who says, "I'm a Gold Star son. My father was killed in a helicopter crash in 1966 in Vietnam." And it just made me think, like, it goes back so far, but it's taken us so long to recognize this segment of amazing people who've really understood the truest sense of the definitions of the word sacrifice, service, and loss. They're just amazing.
See, unfortunately, you know, like my father's time, the Second World War, you know, when they came back, it was like, you know, stiff upper lip, get over it, man. You know, life proceeds on. And they kept all these things to themselves. Well, it wore everybody down. He was dead by 46 because nobody talked about it. There was no coming together. And actually, he was the last of his squadron leader alive. And that's at 46. And part of the healing, a part of the the exploring what the options are, where we can go from here, is making sure that no one's left behind. And that includes the family, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We've just scratched the surface on really coming to understand that, even though the whole Gold Star mothers recognition started post-World War II, but there have been so many conflicts and so many wars worldwide that have had some popularity or acceptance with society. And then there's Vietnam, which was widely unaccepted. And then yes, there's this long war, this 17 years that we've been yes, fighting in the Middle East, and we've committed to this. And when people ask me to this day, do you think we'll ever wake up in our lifetime and read on the news that we're not in Iraq? And you know what I tell them? I hope not. I hope we stay there. I hope we show them what right looks like, and we become partners in that region, not occupiers.
Right. Yes. But builders, inspirers. Yeah. Motivators.
That's the two decades of human life and capital and money and yeah, time and energy into a region. And there has to be something in it other than
a whole load of death,
just status quo going on over there right now. I hope that we figure that out pretty soon.
You know, I do these ecology shows too, and I have a wonderful series called Let's Get Synced right now under the Eco Solution shows. And it is about interviewing people around the world who are changing the mental climate around climate change. And, you know, that mental climate is actually the humanity climate and how we treat each other. And, you know, it's one from Pure Necessity says, it's people, planet, profit. And I think we're looking at that across the board with everything, aren't we? We have to start putting people first, investing in the people, supporting the people, and of course the planet that supports us. And then profit will come from that. And I think if we put people first, you have loyalty, you have camaraderie, you have companionship, you have support, you have love. You're teaching people how to love themselves, so therefore they can learn to love others. Humanity, whether you've been at war with each other or not, at some point it has to stop and say, okay, let that go. What do we learn from it? How do we come together from here and move forward? And that's not just in Iraq, that's everywhere, because you've got discord happening, you know, on the home front. And at some point it has to be let go and put humanity first.
It's all about the people, and whether you're in the military or in the private sector, it's a people business.
Yes.
And as we fought in the city of Ramadi in 2006 and during the surge, what's interesting too is we weren't just fighting this ununiformed, faceless, ruthless insurgent enemy that was hell-bent on doing nothing more than killing Americans. They were also killing Iraqi people. Mm. And we fought in this city amongst the people, these kind, peace-loving Iraqis who wanted peace, they wanted stability, they wanted to take their kids to the soccer game on Saturday and see their kids get married and drive for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we fought every day, 5, 6, 7 times a day, street to street, house to house, room to room, against a well-trained insurgent force. But we did it amongst the people, and some of them really went out of their way to help us. Some of them were so scared to death, mm-hmm, they couldn't help us. And then others, it just became this almost surreal play unfolding on a stage where the people that had been exposed to this type of friction and this chaos for so long had really become desensitized to it, to the point where we would literally be engaged in a firefight, bullets whizzing down streets and off of cars and into people. And there's civilians standing there like it's some spectator sport. And I can just remember back thinking, what are you doing standing there?
Right.
This is a life and death situation, but they've become so desensitized to living in that type of environment. That was their new normal.
Yes. Yeah. And they probably didn't care if a bullet hit them, because what do they have to look forward to when it's the same old, same old? And I think this is what people forget. You know, they want to make, you know, everybody from Iraq the enemy. That's not the case. It's always the fractions. It's always the certain groups that stir everything up and make everyone the enemy. You know, not everybody in Germany in the Second World War was the enemy, right? It they were punished just as much if they were supporters of Jews or supporters of anything else. And we have got to stop painting everybody with one brush. I have a young man on this week from Iraq that when he went to go to university in Europe, because he was from Iraq, he was turned down. Poland was the only person that would take him. But he was under Saddam Hussein's, his whole province was gassed and, you know, genocide going on there. And it's, you know, he's been through his own war. It wasn't the Americans did that to him. It was his own people, you know, that did that to him, the regime that did that to him. And we've got to forget, you know, not forget that it's not about the country of the people. It's about those that stir everything up, that make everybody the enemy. And we really have to start looking at people, as individuals, and not just you're the enemy because.
We've really done a poor job of that in mainstream media. Yes. Portraying that, because to say that ISIS or any radical Islamic faction is representative of Iraq or that region is just absolutely wrong. Yeah. It is not representative of them. And I've still maintained connections with Iraqis that I knew in my multiple deployments to that country and in the Middle East. One of my interpreters, this brave young warrior, citizen warrior at 18 years old, who sacrificed his own safety and life and that of his family to volunteer for the coalition, serve alongside the U.S. Marines, help us speak the language. He didn't have to make that choice, but he did because he wanted something better for his family. And I'm proud to say that he's now an American citizen.
Excellent.
6 years today. And I just flew out June 5th to Tampa to the swearing-in ceremony when he got naturalized. And one of the proudest days of my life. And if you've never been to one of those ceremonies to see one of your fellow countrymen get sworn in, who's an immigrant, coming to this land of opportunity, it should be on your bucket list. I never thought, like, things, oh, I need to go to this. Like, I've flown a jet. I've been to the doctor, all this cool stuff. Never had that on my list. But I'm so grateful, because when I saw Big Sam get sworn in, not only the pride in his face, but the other 38 people from 38 different countries that were getting sworn in that day. And you know me being nosy and kind of a writer, I asked the guy in charge, I says, so how many times do you do this a month? He goes, you mean a week? He said, twice a day, every week, sometimes three times on Fridays.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, that's a lot of... a lot of immigrants coming to our country legally, for the record, in every city around America. And it really was staggering to me to think about that. But I was so proud of that, because he was such a prime example of the greatest success story he could ever imagine when he finished his degree and has gone on to get his second master's degree and his MBA and his certification. And it just really empowering to...
I mean, but that's the American dream, isn't it? You know, there he is, war-torn country, has no idea if there's a future for him at all. And then he gets to come here and live that American dream. He understands what you were fighting for, that freedom, that right, you know, to be able to explore one's life and one's opportunities.
I wouldn't wish the type of perspective that he's had to gain to really value that on anybody. But I will say that it does take some perspective and understanding that even through the worst conditions, and they don't necessarily have to be war. And
right.
I've learned that through my studies and reading and talking to so many people in my network, that people are drawn to each other naturally as a group, or as Sebastian Younger writes in this great book, Tribe, they're drawn together through difficult times, whether it's depression or natural disaster. You never see communities stronger.
Yes.
Military families or military organizations stronger than during or after a war, because that shared adversity is what really bonds people together. And there's so many examples of that. And I always say that it's not exclusive to the military. We don't own those words like sacrifice,
right,
or courage or pride or loss. There's plenty of people that never serve a day in the military that can absolutely understand those words. And I think that's important. And I never like to boast that we have the right to those, because I was kicking doors in and killing bad guys in Ramadi. The person who takes his kids to school on time every day and makes hard choices in their life, or the first responders that help everyday citizens, they get credit too, in my opinion. That's just the way I
am. Well, how many families have you got where they're working two or three jobs just to make ends meet, to raise their children, and they can't keep up with everything, or you are looking at, certain immigrants today who on nationalities, that don't know if they have a future. There's a lot of fear going on right now. And of course, what happens with fear comes blame, and people start pointing fingers. And we can't do that, because that is coming from a place of fear and ignorance. We really need to actually understand what it is we're pointing at. And we've got to stop feeding that and start supporting one another. Because as you said, the heroes in the world are those that are stepping up and doing something for their families, for mankind, selflessly, and doing it in a way that supports one another. And those are the heroes. And there was some commentator that said that post-traumatic stress, it was only for veterans. Well, talk to a woman who's come from an abused marriage, or a child that's been in an abused relationship. Believe me, that post-traumatic stress is there. And it's nothing to be laughed at, sneezed at, or dismissed. And a great deal needs to be more supported about it. And I think this is where a veteran, whether you are helping another veteran or helping somebody else who's gone through some personal trauma, domestic trauma, you understand the feeling of the trauma. You understand the triggers. You understand the fears. Or the, sometimes the crippling of not being able to move forward, because it doesn't matter where your trauma came from. It's still the same feeling, and it could be crippling, can't it?
It, just like the words I just mentioned, post-traumatic stress is not exclusive to the military. Even within our own community, you think about the type of loss and all of those pieces of trauma that you accumulate as a soldier, as a Marine, and the loss you see. But then you've got the families that have to deal with it. And then the things that we've talked about too, about suicide in the aftermath of war, and the trauma that follows the wake of that destruction that the families are suffering from. But it's universal. I never am in a position where I say, well, my trauma is better than your trauma, or your PTS less than mine, because I was doing this and you were in a car wreck, or you were the victim of some sort of sexual trauma, or you're an alcoholic. I had a great podcast I did with brother of the President of the United States, Roger Clinton. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in a coffee shop in LA, wonderful man, and we just had a great time. But he brought that up, and he realized that it, not only was I a massive addict doing all these drugs, drinking myself to death, literally his heart stopped 400 days ago, and he realized, this is it. Like, for my son, I have to do this. And it wasn't until he processed some of that he realized I was not only dealing with the addiction, but also the stress of childhood trauma he endured, and God knows all the pressures that come along with being the brother of the President of the United States of America. So it's not exclusive, and I never like to diminish that.
Right. No. And, this other thing of, well, shouldn't you be over it by now? It doesn't work that way, does it? You get stronger, and the more you find a purpose, and the more you find, that camaraderie, that group of people that understand where you feel safe and where you're at home, the more you're able to go through it and get stronger and find something that's meaningful to you. And that will help you on your way to being, overcoming whatever. But still, there's going to be triggers. There's still going to be those moments. And that is not a sign of weakness. That is a sign when you reach out to your group of comrades there and say, I need help, or I need support.
Yeah. There's absolutely definitions of post-traumatic stress in the short term and long term, and some deal with it differently, and it can be overcome. But those are just, when we talk about triggers, and so if the listeners understand that, is the events that replicate the trauma you've experienced, those are the triggers that you respond to. That's the body's natural reaction dealing with those. And whether one of them is compartmentalization, or maybe one of them is withdrawal or anxiety or hyper awareness, whatever it is, that's a physiological and psychological natural reaction to those inputs that you've received in your life. And I don't have a PhD hanging on my wall behind me, trust me. But again, as somebody
you've
that-
You've got the experience. That is a PhD in my books.
Sometimes that's the best best teacher is life. And really listening to those around you that have experienced some of the higher end effects of what they've dealt with. But really listening to how they've gotten better through it and really the network and this, again, you know, the power of human connection, getting people together in a safe environment where they can share some of the bad and some of the good and the successes is really the best medicine we've found to help our community, our tribe, grow and heal and let them know that it's all right to hurt. It's all right to feel bad about what you've seen or what you've lost, but it's also all right to heal.
Yes.
We're here for you. We're just a phone call away sometimes.
I interviewed another veteran, unfortunately couldn't air for some other reasons, but I really was drawn by his story is that he said that, you know, he was a junkie. He kept signing up, kept going back, the adrenaline rush, the being on all the time. He didn't know how to switch it off. And when he came back, he just couldn't immerse into life. You know, it was too slow. It was too this, it was too that. And he would sign up again. And he said one day a friend introduced him to yoga and he laughed. He goes, yoga. And it ended up being the thing for him. And the yoga helped calm him down, center him. And what he ended up doing was developing a program called Vet Yoga. And it was yoga for veterans and their families to do together, to bring everybody back to in that same center, to that same field, that same platform of calmness. And, you know, it's now really grown. And I feel it's always out of your personal challenge. You find something that clicks with you. It's your book. It's your storytelling. It's your inviting and bringing people together. You find what it is. And then that's your purpose. You go after it. And that impact that it has on other people, because it's coming from a place of having healed you, so now it's going to heal others. You know, it's so incredibly impactful.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that word impact, because I speak about it often when I travel around the country. And it's important because sometimes you don't see the impact in the moment. Sometimes it takes 5, 10, 20, 50 years in some cases to realize the impact you've made. And I'll share another story with you and the listeners and viewers now.
Yes.
About another email I got out of the blue, and it came from Staff Sergeant Phil Morehouse, and he wrote, "Dear sir, I just wanted to let you know that I was a staff sergeant in Task Force 19 Infantry, and I was in the administration shop when the call came across the radio when Corporal Libby was shot. And I remember racing across the road on Route Michigan to the battalion aid station. And I remember watching your convoy come through the maze of chem lights that night and the dust cloud that surrounded the vehicles. And I remember the squeal of the brakes, and I remember your Marines getting out of the vehicles carrying Corporal Libby. I remember every step they took, and I remember every single step you took. And those were things that I haven't thought of in 12 years until I read your book." And he goes on in the email, but he ends with something really important. He says, "Yes, we made a difference." And I tell you, I immediately emailed him back and asked him if I could use his name and share that story. He's absolutely. But what's important about it is I didn't realize the impact I was making on this total stranger that night, this staff sergeant who I'd probably passed by a dozen or more times in the command post and was a nameless, faceless soldier, but now had become this person that I had, through my leadership and through my actions and through our loss that night, it made a distinct impact on Phil. And to look at that and reflect back and to see your writing and your work and to be able to share that story and have it reflected back from him and see it through a different lens, really powerful.
You're telling their story as well. You know, because this is your story of how you saw it, but you're telling their story. And this is the thing, is it's like, I feel I've been heard. I feel that you're telling my story. I feel that you're articulating it in a way that I can't. Right. And that's the important thing. It's your story, how you saw things, what you went through, but that is the same experience and what others saw as well. And by sharing it, you're telling their story, and it gives them permission, you know, to acknowledge that, to step into it. And, you know, you want to know what I went through? Read this book. It says it all, right? Because not everybody can write a book. Not everybody can even speak it. So when you've got somebody else speaking it, you're speaking for them, on behalf of them.
Well, just like what you do in your medium, it takes a capacity to ask questions of people. It takes a capacity to share your story. And especially within the veteran community, there's a lot of people that have shared their stories that have gotten a little bit of grief or pushback saying you shouldn't be telling the story because you're making money off of it, or you're glamorizing war. I don't subscribe to that. Yeah. I think that those people are haters. I think they're poison, because you have to find a way to tell your story. And not everybody has to write a book. I'm not saying that. It's just the thing that some people choose to do. And it's a medium in which it's really effective and timeless to make sure that those stories are captured. And the other thing that was important to me was I didn't want to wait 50 years to have this story told. I didn't want to fall into that trap of previous wars like World War II or Vietnam, where these guys have had to wait so long to process these events that their stories have almost been forgotten. And we're still fighting this war today. There's soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Horn of Africa. We're still fighting. And I'm not going to wait 50 years. That's why I'm continuing to write. I continue to submit my opinion editorials to tons of online magazines and art and journals. It's just that important to me, because at the end of the day, my group, my tribe, my Marines, my family, they're the ones that are the most important to me, because you can't help everybody.
No, you can't. And nor are we meant to, you know. And the thing is that you're not glamorizing anything. You're telling it as it is. And in doing so, it's helping other people a little bit who have no comprehension. I have no, you know, of course I see movies and TV shows, but I have no comprehension of what you guys went through over there. You know, the fact that you have to be on all the time, that a split second can literally be life and death. Who is your enemy? As you know, as you said, faceless, you don't know. You know, the way they use their own people. Sorry?
In the boredom of it all, I think people read my story, and I love those emails too, and they're like, God, I had no idea what you guys went through. Like, I can't believe your family had to deal with that. And those are great emails too, because they make me smile, you know, that they really understand that there's some things that it's exactly like it's portrayed in the movies, and there's other things they'll read in Echo and Ramadi and they'll say, it's nothing like that in the movies. This guy was there. He commanded 250 Marines and soldiers. It's nothing like that in the movies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, because what I wrote is completely unvarnished, and it exposed a lot of the good and the bad, the wins and the losses, so we can learn as leaders, as people who have an interest in team building and overcoming adversity. Those are messages that are laid throughout the work. And that was important to me, to be authentic and completely unvarnished in how I told the story of what those Marines, the families went through.
The other thing is that, you know, unfortunately, there probably still will be more wars, because that's, you know, where human nature is. But, you know, when you have movies and things that glamorize it, make it look so, you know, big, you know, you've got kids signing up for that movie or for the video game. And they think that's what it's about. When they read your book and see the reality of it and what they're really signing up for, you know, I think that is the wake-up call. Because, yeah, the video and the movie can make it look, you know, oh, absolutely great. You know, movies can be made on you. But when it comes to the reality of what you really go through, ask a veteran. Read the book by the veteran and truly understand what it is you're signing up for.
I was that kid. I knew nothing about the Marine Corps. I knew nothing about war. It was all bumper stickers and Hollywood movies, and I was very enticed by the glamour of that. And that soon changed after multiple combat deployments. And I was fortunate having been enlisted and then becoming an officer, that gave me a lot of perspective. Because sometimes people ask me, Sarah, they'll say, well, because you were enlisted, did that make you a better officer? And I always say, no, it did not. But it absolutely gave me a unique perspective of what those young Marines were going through and how valuable their time was. And it really took me writing Echo and Ramadi to look back and realize how young they were,
yes.
18, 19
yes.
old. I mean, think about that, being thrust into that environment. You just graduated high school last year, Sarah, and now you're in the middle of a war zone being shot at and blown up around a bunch of people that don't speak the same language, completely ripped away from your family. And all you have to depend on is the Marines to your left and right.
Yes.
That's
I mean, talk about a wake-up call, you know, from reality, you know. And that's the thing is that they've, you know, thought, oh, you know, it's going to be like the video or like the movies. And when it comes down to it, you're dusty and you're dirty and you've lost another friend today. You know, it's, or you've been shot. I mean, look at how many people come back. You know, Bobby Henlein, which I'm sure you know from Bravo, who I've interviewed a couple of times, who came back, lost part of his arm, all of his, you know, skin on his face. He's had numerous operations. What an inspiration he is, because he's a comedian. But, you know, he talks about the reality of the bad days, those days where you can't find anything funny, those days where it is a struggle. But he chose comedy to be his way of coping with it and inspiring and telling his story. And he's out there. I mean, he's got amazing abs. He's a pinup, you know. And he's an inspiration to the, you know, like your life isn't over when you've been, you know, hit with the cosmic 2x4. You know, he redirected his life. And I think that's very important to see too. You know, not what you went through, but also when you come back, how you can embrace a different life. It's not going to be the same life, but a different life, and who you can become, because now the strength and the courage that you've learned along the way, and the discipline and the structure to get back into something, and you're fighting now a different fight. You're fighting for your life, right? In a different arena.
Yeah, let's talk about Bobby, man. I love that guy because he is inspirational and massively funny. And we were driving up to Canada last July to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and we're on the bus in the convoy that has the broken air conditioner and the windows. So it's me, Bobby Henlein, Jamie Burton, who founded Bravo 748. Yes. We're sitting in the back of this bus, and Daisy's with us too, by the way, his service dogs. Hi, Daisy. Hi, Bobby. And we're sweating. We're just sweating through our clothes, and everybody in the front of the bus starts to chirp and complain and wank about how hot it is. And this goes on for a good 45 minutes to an hour. It's a long drive from the airport when they give us this hero's welcome. Then finally, Bobby spouts up. He says, hey, everybody in the front of the bus, shut up. He goes, you want to know about hot? I'll tell you what hot is. He's blown up and he's engulfed in flames and, you know, 90% of his body is, you know, scarred. But it was like crickets on the bus, except for like me, Bobby, Jamie, and Joe, John Krotek. We just started cracking up because we knew Bobby.
Yeah.
Amazing success story. Love him.
Yes. I actually had him on. There was a young girl on America's Got Talent last year called Keshi, who was a burn victim from a flight that had gone down. And she was burned 65% over her body. And I'd interviewed her before she had gone on America's Got Talent. One day I switched it on and there she is, because singing was her thing to help her through it. And of course, when initially she stood up, everybody could see the disconfiguration, because she's had so many things had to be rebuilt. And then when she sang and heard the soul and the beauty of her, and she went all the way up to the finals, and she was such a beautiful person. But I decided to have her and Bobby on a show together. And I've had people listen to that saying they were crying, not because they felt sorry for them, but because they were so inspired about who they were and the passion and the conviction and the camaraderie and the laughter and the love that they have for life. Yes, they have those daily challenges and they know when they have to give themselves time, but they chose to live. Hey, we got a second chance at life. We're not going to throw it away. They are both such an inspiration. And that's the beauty of it. I mean, that's the reason why I do these shows with you, Vets. It's that, you know, it's not about the glory of war. It's not about, you know, the He-Man type thing. It is about your compassion, your conviction to take that same strength and tenacity that kept you alive over there and what you're doing here now.
There's so many examples of, you know, what we do in the military and how they apply to transitioning into the private sector that are important. And we do a good job for veterans transitioning them to get jobs. We don't do such a great job at transitioning them psychologically or mentally on how different that's going to be once they get out. And that's something important that I love to talk about as far as transition goes, and understanding not only the challenges that veterans will have to overcome, but also understanding things about themselves that are great, and understanding that, yes, you led a life of service and you can continue to do that in different areas, but really understanding that you have to also understand your own value and what, how important your story is, and that nobody else can tell your story. Those experiences in the military under those conditions of combat or non-combat at peacetime, those stories are very unique. And when you, I guess, cross-pollinate the military veteran community with the civilian community, you get such a better perspective on challenges. And I remember working up in LA, and I worked around a group of young millennials, and they would say to me on occasion, "Man, Scott, you never seem to get bothered or flustered by any of this. You know, it's so stressful." I'm like, "Well, no, it's not really stressful. I'm like, what I'm compared to, because stress is a different meaning to me. But I look at things through a different lens." And I told them, at the end of the day, no one's bleeding, right? And kind of a light came on to them.
Yes, everyone's coming home. Yeah. Have I lost you?
What is unique to be able to hear?
You're having a wobbly here at the moment. Yes, you're just having a bit of a wobbly at the moment. So,
okay.
Hopefully got you back.
Always unique to have that blend of perspective to realize at the end of the day, things can always be worse. And I think that applies to everybody's world. And I'm not talking about mine at the extreme in combat, but everybody deals with pressures and it's hectic sometimes. You deal with that friction of life and you have to battle through. But when you blend those circles and those networks together, I think it's so cool. And that's, again, been the secret to my success as I've transitioned from the military and, you know, working as an artist now. Those circles continue to overlap more and more and more and become 2 degrees of separation through doing media, through great shows like yours or others, and being able to share that network unselfishly to help support other people. And I'm not just talking about veterans. I'm talking about emails and correspondence I get from people that want to write their own book. And do I have time to teach people to write their own book? No, I had to learn it on my own. So that's the lesson I really give.
Yes.
Google, it's crazy. You just type in the question.
Get it down first. You know, the tip there is just write everything down there. And then you go through the editing and the processing, but pour it out, right? Pour it out. And, you know, I think that, as you said, from writing the book and then having the response from people reading the book, you're actually seeing, because, you know, from the show last year where we talked about what happened over there, the reason why you wrote the book, the story you wanted to tell, to now, and the impact that it's had on people just in the 6 months. It's quite amazing because you're now, as you said, seeing the book through different eyes from whence you wrote it. And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Because we can all look at one thing and this is what it is. But when people start looking at it from different points of view and shed light on it from a different angle, from how it affected them, how it's touched them, it opens things up so much more. And that's the beauty of it.
It is. There's so many examples. One podcast wouldn't be enough for me to list all of them. And like the video I posted yesterday, I'm trying to do a better job of sharing those because I think they're wonderful stories. Yes. And they're not always sad stories. Some of them are really funny. I got one from a housewife who'd read my book, and I used the word friction. Sometimes it's just an entire paragraph. Sometimes it's an entire sentence. That one word, friction, just that pressure that comes down on you and you don't have control over it. She said, "You know, when I'm at home and my husband starts giving me a hard time and the kids
Oh, we have a wobbly again.
They're barking, and my husband chimes in again. Thought it was extremely funny that even in a lighter sense, you know, she made a connection with what we had to deal with there and what she deals with on a daily basis. So it's, there's
well,
a ton
life
of
is
examples.
Life is a battle, isn't it? You know, it's a different form of battle. And, you know, it's a different outcome at the end of each day. But, you know, we all go through a battle. And I think kind of learning from the veterans that come home that, you know, are now fighting a different battle, because you're not going to go back into the life you had before. You're not going to be that person you were before. You're in self-discovery of who you are and what your role is now. And not only have you got to download or release what you have been, you've got to find what platform it is that's now going to lead you on a different purpose, on a different role in your life. And that requires that self-discovery. It requires you to take that journey. And you're lucky. I don't know, how long was it from when you came home to when you decided to write the book?
It'd been about 10 years when I first started writing the book. And I had a massive setback. I'd written, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30,000 words. And a book's 90,000 words for the listeners and viewers. So that's what a book is, 90,000. So I thought I was off on this great start to write this story, and it was going to be a, you know, great tale. Drove home, tragedy, someone broke into my car, stole my computer, a personal journal, it was gone. And
sorry, folks, for having a wobbly again.
It wasn't backed up. I couldn't. It was just the person that was helping me edit it didn't save it.
Oh, no.
And so several years went by in the Marine.
We're definitely having a bit of a wobbly here.
They'd ask me, "Hey, sir, how's the book coming?" Sorry.
Yeah, we're just having a bit of a wobbly there today. But so you were asked, how's the book going?
Yeah, the Marines would ask how the book's coming, and I said, great, totally lying to him. Hadn't written a word. And so then after I transitioned again from my job in LA, bought a ranch in Southern California, locked myself in my office and started writing in earnest, it really took on a different path, and it really became the book it is today. So I think that, again, a massive setback that really hit me hard, really was something positive, because I took the book in a different direction. I conducted over 75 interviews with the Marines and the families, and it just really shared their story. And it got to a point where I shared so much of their story, my editor, Sylvia Mendoza, said, "Scott, there's not enough of you in here."
Right.
And so I had to go back in, share some of myself. And that's where, when you use the word self-discovery on Self-Discovery Radio, you really do have to dig deep. And editors love using that word, dig deeper. I still don't know what it means. It just means giving yourself and understanding, you know, the wins and losses in your life. And that's what leadership is too, is not just sharing those victories, but the wins and losses. And, you know, life is a struggle. Life is slippery. And I think that everybody will slip and fall at times, and the real leaders and the real success stories understand that there's going to be a time when you lose traction and you're going to slip and you're going to land hard, but you pick yourself up. And it sounds cliche, but it's true.
Yes.
But the real leaders don't identify those slippery spots on the road so they don't fall again. They do it so those they lead don't suffer the same injury and the same falls.
Yeah, I always call it, is, you know, the avoiding the pitfalls. You know, you're going to hit, you know, the pockets in the road, and you learn to jump over them. But, you know, you're avoiding the complete deep pit that we had to go through. And when we came out of it, we're saying, avoid that one. Avoid that one. Go around it. But everybody's going to have a pothole along the way, right? And, you know, you'll redirect. Had that book come out, it may have had a totally different meaning. And so that's just, you know, the divine coming along, tapping you on the shoulder, going, wrong direction. Just going to take it away from you, let you stew in it for a while, and then put you back on the right path.
Maybe, yeah.
And look where it's brought you now. Look where it's brought you now.
You're a good guy. I pardon you, and as painful as it was, and, you know, slippery spots, but I like to think that it allows me to be there for other people so they don't make the same mistakes now, or so they can have the same success in what they choose to do now. So that's important to me.
I mean, I love the way that the book has meant something different to each of the people that have read it. You know, they've read the stories and you can just acknowledge the stories, but it's how those stories relate to their own lives. You know, whether they're a veteran, whether a veteran family, whether they're just mainstream people, there's always that parallel where you go, like, you know, I get where he's coming from, or I understand that. Although I didn't do that, I did this. I know the feeling. And it's that relatability, that connection where we feel somebody understands, right? And that's, it validates people.
Yeah, those are some of the most powerful comments and feedback I get are from people that have never served a day in their life that really respect veterans or the military, or maybe they wanted to join the military, or maybe they were anti-military. I love those. They're like, I was never pro-military, but now that I've read this book, which I never thought in a million years I would pick up and read, but you had me at the first chapter. I was so sucked in. And by page 7, I was tearing up, but I battled through, and I really have a better understanding now of what you sacrifice, what you go through in that brotherhood and sisterhood and the bond. And to get those from people that will flat out say, you know, I was anti-military, that's validating. And that's a message of unity in this climate, this political mess that we're in here in the as your next door neighbor, where it's so divisive and this constant rhetoric and back and forth, where we've forgotten to be patriots and to be Americans instead of just being Republicans and Democrats. We have to go back to that. When I receive messages from people that read a book that's not about war, again, it's a book about people. I think that example right there, as we started the program, about the core message is about people. It's about the power of human connection. When I get feedback like that, it's completely validating that this bad ass door kicker looks like he's gonna, you know, ruin your day. You know, obviously I couldn't put a vase of tulips on the cover of the book, but it is about the people. And those are amazing stories that are shared with me.
It's not about the number of people that you took down. It's not about, you know, the big heroic ass of who you were. It's about the lives that are affected, you know, the lives that are going out the fight. I'm not anti-military, but I am anti-war, as you know. I always feel let's look at other options. We go in when we have to, when it's absolutely necessary, but let's look at other options, because I hate the profit of war. There's always somebody that's going to profit, and very often there's pushes of war because of that profit. That's what I'm opposed to. But we are always going to have somebody that's going to have to willing to put themselves on the line to help us, whether it's a war or whether it's, you know, the fight with nature, or getting out there, you know, against, you know, other things that are happening, other repressions that are happening, or just being there to support the community in some way. There's always going to be people that are going to be sacrificing themselves for us. And we've got to stop looking at them as machines, or it's their job, and, you know, that's what they signed up for, and if they die, so what? You know, that's the human beings who are putting us first by going and doing what they're doing.
There's such a special breed of people too that I call protectors. These people that give of themselves and sacrifice so much to really help those that can't help themselves. Yes. And oftentimes people that can't help themselves are really the worst critics. And the protectors are the first people they call. And, you know, Dave Grossman, who's a good friend of mine, who wrote On Killing and On Combat, which is all about society. He uses such an amazing analogy about sheepdogs, that people in the military and first responders, they're like sheepdogs. They protect the flock. And when the wolf comes, the sheepdog is right there to chase him away. But when the wolf doesn't come, the sheep see the sheepdog and they look at him. He's got pointy teeth. He's got long, shaggy hair. He looks a little bit like the wolf, so they start to resent him. Mm-hmm. When they really him again, who do they go to?
Yes. Border collies are my breed, by the way. I fully understand what you're talking about there.
I love it.
Yeah. I lost mine 2 years ago, but I've had four of them, and they're mostly, and they're always working. That's the important thing. is it doesn't matter if it's people times, not times, sheep or no sheep, they're always working. They've got to herd something. Right? So you can't take the soldier out of the soldier just because there isn't a war at the moment, right? They've got to find something else to herd.
No, it's true. There's such a small percentage, and the military alone in our country represents less than 0.5% of the entire American population of 330 million in comparison to what's Canada, 30 million right now?
36, 37 million now. You could put all of us in California.
Got a lot of space.
We do have a lot of space. It's beautiful.
We're
peaceful here, man. Hey. So I know you're writing another book. So what can you tell us about that, and when do we expect it?
Well, I'm in the middle of the interview process and putting the chapters together right now for another great story of military heroics about the about an aviator this time who, again, suffers some loss and tragedy but overcomes through and triumphs thanks to his determination. And it's just an amazing story that I want to share again. If I don't tell these stories, who will?
Exactly.
That's why when I think I'm going to sit and watch TV, which I never do, I write, and I write a little bit, and I do some work, and I'm also a contributing editor to several online publications to write op-eds, which keeps me busy. And I'm currently working on working into the film industry right now on a full-length feature documentary, which I can't discuss too much, but you know, it's very exciting. And well, I always like to give a true confession when I do an interview, and true confession is, like, I know nothing about filmmaking. I have no MFA. I did not go to film school.
But you've got the content. The other people have got the skill. You've got the content.
Not just the content. The story is absolutely there, but what's helping me is I'm a self-learner and I'm putting in the work. I'm doing the work myself before I even reach out to those in my network and ask for help. And trust me, I have no problem asking for help. Like, I think this interview occurred because I emailed you. I go, hey, Sarah, I want to be on your show.
Yes, like, exactly. Time for a new one. Most certainly. And I'm delighted to have you back, because it's wonderful to be able to show the progress. You know, as I said, I don't want to go over the story again. They can listen to that show. I want them to hear how it's had an impact and the diversity of that impact, that it's not just one mainstream, you know, of who it has an effect, the relatability, the light bulbs that go on with people. And that's the beauty. And that's what you're doing, sharing that, is shedding light on something of the reality of it, the humanity of it, and understanding how much we need to be there for one another, which is so very important.
And sometimes people are too embarrassed or too apprehensive to ask for favors. And I think when people are successful in life, they realize that it's not self-serving when you do that. I think the case in point with this show is I asked, like, I wanted to finish up on our conversation, and you probably been so busy, like, and by staying connected, it just continues to develop the network. So as I move forward in my career, and, you know, continue to tell this story, Echo and Ramadi, I love doing those follow-up interviews where we were a year ago, and all of these things, especially on self-discovery, where people can understand how, again, impactful it is to people. And
well, that's what you're doing. People are having a self-discovery through reading your book and these other stories. They're always going to find something of themselves in them. It doesn't matter if they're not a veteran, or if they were a veteran and they were somewhere else doing something else. There's always something that relatable into there that they comprehend, that they've gone through, or they relate to in some way. And that's the thing. It's the connection, the thread that you're bringing about of, don't put them here and us there. The thread is in the heart and in the soul and in the why and in the camaraderie of us. And if you actually understand what they've gone through, it helps you relate more to them. Because one of the biggest problems for people who aren't in the military, they don't know how to speak to veterans. You know, do I mention this? Don't I mention this? Should I say this? Shouldn't I say that? They don't know. And by telling the stories and making it real, you're opening up that dialogue where people don't feel so intimidated to actually say something, because they just have no idea what to say, right?
Some don't. There's always awkward moments in certain conversations, but I hope that through my writing and sharing my story and getting out there and doing the public speaking and charity work that I enjoy doing and connecting people, I think that that's going to continue to make me happy, because at the beginning and the end of every day that I wake up and go to sleep, I'm veterans, and that's what makes me happy, and I'm proud to do it. And
I love the impact you're having. You see, people say, I'm only one person, I can't make a difference. Yes, you can. Look what's just happened here. One person decided to tell these stories. One person decided to dedicate to getting these stories out. And one person is having such an impact on other people's lives because he decided to step forth. You're one person. I always say, I interview ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And what you're doing is extraordinary and invitational. It's inspiration and invitational. What's going to be the name of the new book, and when do we expect it out? Because, of course, you've got to come back and tell me all about that.
Yeah, that's to be determined still. So I just have a working title, so we'll just leave it at that. But you can expect more from me. But we're still keeping our foot on the gas with Echo and Ramadi. Like I said, it's only been out 6 months, and it's already sold out. But it's back in stock on Amazon right now. So Excellent. If you're watching or listening, just know that when you buy a copy of this amazing story, you're not just getting a great story, you're also helping support veterans, because I donate a portion of the proceeds to Save the Brave, which helps veterans with post-traumatic stress. I'm also the executive director, so I know where all of those funds go. I know who manages the account.
Yes.
So it's, again, it's what makes me happy. It's what I'm dedicated to. And, I love it when everybody gets a copy of this book. And if you do read it, you can reach me online at my website at echoandramadi.com. You can email me, share your story with me. And I hope that in a month or 2 months from now, people that watch the show and they bought a copy of the book, my challenge to them is get the book and read it and then tell me how it impacted you.
Right.
Share your
story. Well, there is another book in the reaction to this book. Right, that's another book in itself,
exactly.
Because that needs to be shared. That's the reason why we're doing this show right now. As I said to you, I don't want to go over the book again. I want to go over the impact the book has had, and because it's a validation of why you've taken your journey. Right, I mean, you're doing it for a reason. Portions, you know, going to support other veterans for post-traumatic stress, and believe me, that post-traumatic stress has many, many scales to it. And it's something that's with people for life, and it's a management thing that you have to have and support and various ways. Of course, the dogs are brilliant. They're fantastic. Finding avenues that will help you. And having that kind of support is really, really important. So thank you for doing that. But just the sheer fact that you've got people opening up and communicating and responding and sharing. You know, somebody may not read your book, but they may read a comment. And they may go, you know, yes, that's me, or I feel that way, or I can express this too. Now I need to read the book to find out what it's about. And we don't know from where it comes or why, you know, why, but we need to open up those floodgates, don't we? And let people communicate. It's so important.
Yeah, I'm just happy to do it. I'm always happy to be on your show and always happy to share friends of mine and introduce you and anything you ever need.
Send over. I haven't done veterans for a while. Please send over some more people. I'd love to share more stories. I'm inspired. You know, I'm always inspired by people who overcome diversity, you know, and from that discover who they really are and what their contribution is. Because really what we're here for as a humanity is to find out what is our service. I put it this way. What is our musical instrument? How do we perfect in playing it? We then bring it to the orchestra to create a wonderful symphony that resonates out and invites other people. So it's, you found your instrument, it's the pen. right? And that is your instrument.
Next guest I'll send you is a veteran, and he's a musician. You just
yes. I've had a few here. You just go to selfdiscoverytv.com. Go to our veteran stories. I've got a number of veterans, including Scott from last year, and Bobby, and a few musical veterans as well. And I love sharing the stories because you are an inspiration. I love the way you've taken the same strength and courage that got you through the war, and you've brought it back. To be very productive, very contributive, and very supportive, not just of other veterans, but of humanity in itself. And it's so inspirational. So thank you, Scott, so much for being you.
Well, thank you. And thanks to all the watchers and listeners on Self-Discovery. I'm very grateful and always happy to be on the show with you guys. Thanks.
Well, I look forward to the next time with the new book. Maybe you can tell us more about that documentary at that time. So it's echoinramaldi.com, right?
Echoinramaldi.com, or viewers and listeners can go to Amazon to get a copy of the book. It's on hardcover, Audible, Kindle, MP3, every format.
Every format. Yeah, no excuse. You can get it in every way that you want to, right?
It shows up on your doorstep in 2 days. So
excellent. Wonderful. Well, this was exciting. It's always lovely to hear, the impact a book has had. And I'm delighted to have you back on again. Can't wait till next time. So you'll be back next year with the new book and we'll discuss that. And just keep on rocking, man. You're flowing. You've got some good vibrations here and you're sharing with everyone. So I love it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again.
Until next time, folks, remember, we are one person. We can make a difference. We can take all our experiences, no matter how they've been, however hard or how easy or whatever they have been, and we can turn those experiences into sharing it with others, because that wisdom that you've learned from what you've gone through is going to help somebody else on their journey. So please go and get the book. Please contact Scott with your response to the book, because that is an inspiration for someone else. Until next time, folks. Bye for now. For more wonderful shows like this, please go to selfdiscoveryradio.com, podcasts, and see our lineup. And if you wish to support us, we have a funded button. Please stay tuned for our next show.